Yeah, hello everyone. It's Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International. And today we're going to talk about, kind of continue our conversation from last time when we talked about sports visualization techniques. And this time, you know, Evan, one of our students, our coaches, asked last time to talk about assessments for sports imagery as well, how to, you know, assess their abilities or how they're doing with their imagery or what they might need help with and or which, you know, senses people use most often. So those are really good things to take a look at, too, so that you know that, that way you can individualize your sports imagery visualizations for them depending on what their mode of learning is. And so talk about how to assess your athlete's imagery competence or experience. And then, not that it's a test or anything, because there's no right or wrong, but just to take a look at what they, how they are experiencing it, what they're doing so far. So some athletes, you know, when they close their eyes, they see very vivid images. Other ones don't see anything. Others might, you might need your help or some tips with that. And then some questions to ask your athletes to dive deeper into their imagery experience and techniques for improving your client's ability to visualize. And then techniques for how to leverage and use their five senses so that they can bring in that. And at any time, if any of you want to have a question, you can jump in, question or comment about any of these topics, too. And then I'll give you some examples, some questions that I use with athletes and examples of questionnaires that are out there to measure sports visualization ability. And then if you have examples also of different ways that you assess their visualization or abilities, you can bring in examples, too, of that or case studies. I'm happy to share those. And then how to handle their responses and what to do if a person has difficulty visualizing and what you can do to enhance your imagery ability with each of the athletes. So there's so many different ways that we can take a look at this. There's no right or wrong way and all kinds of possibilities there. So, and a lot of you have done, some of the modules talk about that in our PECI program, giving you the chance to, look at having a practice client and doing a visualization with them and getting a sense of what they're able to do. So I wanted to first give you just some tips for, before we do the assessment part, give some basic tips for teaching visualization to athletes. Oh, I think, I heard a ding. Did someone else just join us too? Just wanted to welcome you.
Yeah, hi guys, Matt Pendola here. How you doing?
Oh, hi Matt, good to have you on our call.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's great, yeah. I just received your exam also for the certification, so that's great last night, so I'll take a look at that. And so you guys are really moving along here. That is awesome.
Oh, thank you. It was fun. I learned a lot. It's good to sort of get those challenges and have to really think about how you're going to approach things. So it was a good process. I appreciated it.
Yeah, and that you have a lot of experience with the physical and the athletic training as well as mental training with runners, especially. So, yeah, it's great. And let's see. And Dave, remind me which athlete, what kind of sports are you working with?
Track athletes. I'm a former football player. Just a wide, in my younger years, I traveled as a soccer player. So I think those three sports primarily, but, I'm a therapist. So as far as where my practice is going. I'm actually, after 17 years, going to make the jump to straight private practice. I was working for the courts in the hospital for a period of time. So, yeah, I'm really excited about it, just that transition towards, you know, just working, you know, I think it'll be like 50% athletes and 50% families and just my individual clients. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Great. Yeah, you've got skills in both of those areas. And I know with, yeah, it's good that you have the experience with families, too. I've worked with athletes with, well, yeah, I've worked with, I'm a licensed psychologist as well as sports psychologist, so I work with general practice as well. And it's good to have that experience, how to work with individuals and how to work with teams and how to work with families. If you have those, because as you know, parents can often be the problem, can be more of a problem than the athlete themselves in terms of their support or too much pressure or lack of support with the athlete. So, yeah, so that's great. So let me just go over a few things that with teaching visualization to athletes and I think it's good to tell them, you know, first there's no right or wrong way of doing imagery and be open to their ideas with visualization because often the younger the athlete is, the more they're probably visualizing themselves anyway, and they could teach us new ways of seeing every aspect of a new sport and seeing things in a whole new light. So it's good to get their idea of what they are already doing or how they would like to visualize something, how they see it. I mentioned one athlete earlier, a 10-year-old who I asked him to, he's a batter, and I asked him to see. He says, I want to visualize that I am the ball, you know, the baseball and what that feels like. And then he said, okay, now I want to visualize that I am the bat and what it feels like to connect with the ball. And I had never thought of that myself. And he was teaching me how to look at these things differently. So athletes can give you a whole new range of looking at things. And then I think it's good to tell them the benefits of imagery first so that you can, it helps you to compete at your best regardless of what you can't control. You can control your imagery, your visuals, and what you're seeing in your mind. Whether you're seeing yourself making mistakes, then that part's going to come out. Or if you see yourself doing it right, then that's more likely to happen. So seeing that and then helping your athletes to recover quickly from mistakes, getting them to be able to you know, get out of that self-defeating mindset and into feeling strong inside and being able to, I think imagery is a really good way to help your athletes reflect on their performances and to learn valuable lessons from every win and loss and be able to really see what they could improve on or what they could do differently. Usually visualization can really bring out the fine points, the little details of, oh, I need to slow down here or I need to be more accurate here or maybe I was breathing. Maybe they notice their breathing is too short and shallow, you know, in the chest and they need to slow down the breathing to be able to relax more. It can help you really reflect on your performance and on your state of mind. And then it's good to use the right verbal language for their age. So depending on what age you're working with, you want to make visualization easily accessible to your athletes by using the words or concepts they understand. You know, real young athletes might not know the word visualization, but you could just say, let's pretend that something is happening. With a younger athlete, they understand the word pretend easily. Or older athletes might, you know, use a different word of just let's mentally rehearse something. Yeah, see it happening before you do it, that kind of thing. So, and then you might give examples of phrases that they might use. So, you know, you could say, I want you to use your imagination to make a movie in your mind. Movie in your mind is a good one to use to because everyone's seen a movie or everyone's been on YouTube. So imagine you're watching a YouTube little section and what you would see there. And that's a good reference point. Or I want you to pretend if they're younger kids, you could say. And then you want to make the process easy and simple, not intimidating. So start with something that's more general. Maybe, you know, imagine depending on what they're interested in, you know, just like an eating exercise. Imagine eating a lemon and your mouth salivating, or picture a phone, or, you know, kids play video games. Imagine you're playing a video game. What's your favorite video game? Or bicycle, something that they are used to seeing. First start with something easy, and then bring in all their senses, like we talked about last time, once you want, and we'll talk more about that here as we go along about how to measure that. Once they talk about, say, what they see, you can ask them about all their senses, depending on the person. You know, what does that lemon feel like in your hand, the feeling part, and then what does it smell like? Everybody can know the smell of a lemon. What does it sound like as you're squeezing the lemon? And what does it taste like? So all those things, and what does it look like? Obviously, it's yellow, or is it bright yellow, or what shade of yellow is it? So get more specific with your question. So you can do that, a simple general exercise. And then the next thing you want to do is make the exercise sport-specific. So once they've had some practice with that, you could ask them to remember their best. And one thing you could do in terms of assessment is ask them, how vivid is it for you? How vivid is that image? Do you rate it one, say, 1 to 10, 10 being the most vivid? You can really see it. You can really, or their, with their each of their senses, with smelling the lemon, is it really a, can you really smell it in a strong way, a 10, or can you barely, it doesn't have much smell at all, you could do a 10, you know, a 1, have them rated on a 1 to 10 scale, each of the senses. And then you could say, what does it sound like? Is there anyone talking? In the visualization, I mean, so asking them things, sorry, with the talking part, I want to refer to if there's someone around with the visualization with them doing their sport. So ask, you know, find out what their sport is, of course, and then you can ask them, where are you, and what were you wearing while you're visualizing something that happened? How did you feel? And happy? Were you not sure? Were you excited? What kind of feelings did you have? But it's good to not put words in their mouth, of course, and just to ask the question generally and then let them answer and ask what the weather was like, was it sunny or cold, and what did your coach or your parents say after the game, or if you were by yourself, what did you say to yourself, maybe what did your teammates say to you, so you can hear the voices of these other people. So those are some other things you could assess on with asking them how they're doing. And then it's good to remove the pressure by saying, you know, if your mind wanders when we're doing a visualization, that's normal. It's okay. Just take the pressure off. Make it kind of fun and pressure-free. So those are some things, kind of some basic techniques when you're showing someone visualization initially. And then I wanted to give you an example of some of the questions that I ask with visualization. You could have them go through and do, you know, the assessment that I do, that pre-visualization assessment that's in the module, I think it's module 2 or 3 with the PECI program. Those are really good questions to ask for before you do a visualization so that you can create a visualization for them. So that's another type of assessment that I've created, you know, where you can, so that it helps you to create your visualization script for them, asking them about highlights, of their visualization and their senses, you know, bringing in what they remember best first, kind of the overall picture, and then bringing in all five senses to the experience. And then the specifics, ask them to give you the play-by-play and with all the details, you know, where were you and who was there and what did you do before the before your event, you know, say the warm-up or driving there, what were your thoughts, how did you feel, how did that affect your actions, and tell me, you know, both the negative and positive parts, but then you want to just, it's good to get the whole picture, and then when you do a visualization with someone, it's better just to only put in the things that were helpful or the positive actions and not the negative ones, since they'll be playing this over and over again. So emphasize what went well. And then, you know, just talk about what happened next, and keep going with that, the start and the middle of the experience, and then the ending. You know, when you finished a race, or it could be a practice, and then goes through the senses, you know, visual, what did you see, who were you with, what was it, a planned activity or spontaneous? Sometimes something happens spontaneously in the middle of a race or an event, and you know, what was the venue? Sometimes it's something that where they didn't expect something to happen. Somewhat a competition, the person shows up that they didn't expect before, and throws them off or can challenge them. So yeah, and then bring in the auditory. What phrases did you hear? Maybe something that coach said to them, or something that parents said really makes a difference. I know I was working with a track athlete an athlete that was doing a cross country race recently up here close to me in San Carlos in California, and there's a cross country course here that is real well known throughout the state, and he was running the end of the course, and the coach yelled out, clean the cereal bowl. What does that mean? But the coach had taught them what that means beforehand, and that really allowed him to finish the race, meaning cleaning the cereal bowl is like after you after you eat something, you get the cereal bowl and it's dirty, and it's a lot easier to clean if you do it right away when everything's wet on there versus, you know, doing it when it's most efficient. Or if you set the cereal bowl out and it dries in the sun, then it's baked on there. It's a whole lot harder to clean, right? So he uses that analogy in the race and yelled out, clean the cereal bowl, meaning, okay, now's the moment. He sees the moment. You know, this guy in front of you is tired, or this is the time. They're going up the hill. They're dying. You're getting stronger. Clean the cereal bowl. So something like that can make a big difference. And so, you know, just something that someone hears, or it could be your own inner thoughts that you say to yourself. So, and then the kinesthetic part, of course, your sense of touch and what you remember and the temperature and going through. I know, Matt, you had just sent me a visualization of your race, that Spartan race, World Championships race, where it was really cold, and when it's really cold, and I could really hang on every word there and relate to it myself, because my hands get cold and they're numb and can't do anything with my hands as well. So that can be something that you work through it really well, and so it's good to be able to focus on challenges that you did have and then how you work those through. And then, you know, your sensations, what were those? Maybe you're really tense or relaxed, or maybe you're bent over with pain or whatever it was, you know, focus on that. And then it's a sense of smell, and if you're out in the trees, you know, you can bring that in. Your emotions, you know, that's really important to talk about those. What were you feeling, and what was your experience? What details did you remember? What was your mindset going into the event? What were you thinking and during your event? So, and then the physical part as well. Of course, sometimes we all have to work through pain in a race, or not feeling so great. And it's good to just, I think, ask someone during that time when they felt the worst, Well, what did that feel like, and what did they do to get through that? Because whatever they did, that's their strength, and you can really draw on that and capitalize on it. And then people find that, dig down deep when they're hurting and find out what they're made of, and you can help the athlete to explore and understand what it was that they did that brought them through that difficult time, and they can continue to use that over and over in other events. So that's good to find out what it was, that moment when they were feeling the best and that moment when they were feeling the worst, and what did they do to get through that? Because then you can begin to find out their inner strengths and build on their personal strengths rather than just imposing your own ideas, which you can do also, but help them to explore what they are already doing, their own inner strengths first. So those are some things with the pre-visualization assessment. And then I wanted to give you some other ideas about assessment too. Let me just check in with all of you first and just ask what responses you have so far, or questions or comments, or what experience do you have with visualization yourself, doing it yourself, or working with your athletes? Anyone can jump in. And you can just press, if you have your phone muted, just press *6 to unmute.
Hi, yeah, guys. Matt Pendola. Just wanted to comment on just how pre-visualization had changed things for my coaching, and it's just more of a thought. But I was really sort of resistant to some of the transparency issues, I guess, that I had as a coach, and then relaying information to my athletes, understanding that I was sort of the one that they were looking to, and sometimes I felt like I shouldn't make it about my own experiences, or that I would maybe be vulnerable in the sense of sharing information with my athletes that would have them maybe see me differently in their eyes. And what I realized in writing my breakthrough story is that my athletes wanted to experience that side of me, and then they were willing to do the same. So when we stepped into pre-visualization, they really weren't sure. I did it with 5 or 6 of my athletes and through this process for PCI, and they really weren't sure about it, and I noticed they were giving sort of a little bit more generic type of answers. So I just, again, kind of gave them my own pre-visualization story. I let them sort of interpret that and then ask me questions, almost like it was a role reversal, and then we got into theirs. And so I guess what I'm saying there is I feel like even just giving your own experiences and your own stories to your athletes as examples helps a lot, or at least it did for me and my athletes and what we're trying to accomplish with that. And I feel like the conversations were much more open at that point. And the performance partners that we tend to do in our gym really thrived off of working with each other on their stories, actually. So we did it that way as well, so that we all knew each other's stories. And I thought maybe that would close things off a little bit, potentially more, but it kind of did the opposite. I think it really opened things up, so we all kind of knew how to support each other, if that makes sense. But I just thought I'd kind of comment on how that process worked for us at my facility.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Yeah, it's great. You giving your own personal story of how you used visualization could be really powerful, I think, because most athletes could relate to that and say, oh, yeah, okay, and it gives them some language, possible language, too, to be able to describe their visualization experience. And, if you do you describe it well with vivid imagery like you do, then other athletes can it opens them up, like you say, he did that, okay, I can do that too with my experience. So that's great, Matt. How about you, Dave? or George?
Yeah, I could kind of, this is Dave, I could kind of speak to that too, as far as, you know, like self-disclosure. It's like, you know, especially with this younger generation, you know, they're, in many ways, their life experiences aren't quite as expansive as maybe when we were in our younger years, just because of social media and just kind of being kind of locked down. So, you know, I look at self-disclosure and sharing a story, kind of that vulnerable piece, to help them to move forward. Like, self-disclosure is not empathy, but it's opening a door for the client. And I didn't, initially when I started my practice, I didn't do a whole lot of it, but now I do, just to open the door. And I always let them know that the reason I'm telling them that, like my kind of point to process, my own process, is I want to move them forward. So I'm opening that door for them. So, and generally they're really responsive to that, because, you know, if somebody says, oh yeah, I went through that too, and then they kind of take over, you know, I've seen clinicians do that before, and it stops the conversation, it stops the process for that person. So really to make it for them is kind of where I take it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's good to do things that help move the process along here. So, that's good. Thanks, Dave. And I know you've had a lot of experience with this, with counseling and visualization. Yeah, and George, you're working with hockey athletes, right? What's your experience with visualization for yourself or with your clients?
So, can you hear me?
Oh, now I can, yeah.
Hello?
Oh, now there's a pause. Now I can't hear you. Are you, I don't know if you're on a phone or traveling. Are you there, George? Might be out of range or something with the phone. So keep trying. Are you guys both there? Just so I know that.
Yeah, I'm here.
I'm here.
Yeah, Matt and Dave. Okay. We'll wait for see if George can come back and join us here. Maybe he's just trying to reconnect there. George, if you can hear me anytime that you want to jump in, that you can feel free to. But right now we can't hear you somehow. Are you there now? I just heard like a half a word. So it might be in and out of a range or something on the phone. One thing you can do with visualization too is do a questionnaire, so that you have, you know, you give them a couple of questions and have them rate it on a scale of how vividly they see an image. So there's no image, or it's moderate, you know, it would be a 1, moderate would be a 3, and say extremely clear, vivid image would be a 5. And so just to kind of find out how they are using their senses, and then pick pick what you could do a sport when they're practicing alone. First, pick one skill in your sport and imagine yourself doing this whenever you normally practice, but say there's no one else there, just yourself practicing. If you're running alone or swimming alone or doing some of your drills, even if it's a team sport, you could practice doing drills alone. And then close your eyes for a minute and try to see yourself and hear the sounds, feel your body perform, and be aware of your state of mind. And then you could ask, and I'll send these questions afterward to you too, ask your client, you know, okay, how well did you see yourself doing the activity? So focus on the visual part first. How well did you see yourself doing the activity? And then ask them to rate it from 1, no image, I didn't see anything, to, you know, 5, could be extremely vivid and clear. And then you could ask, how well did you hear the sounds of the activity? And then you could give examples, if you want, of people cheering, or it could be if you're in the water, hearing the sounds of the water, the sounds of birds, or baseball, the sound of your bat hitting the ball, you know, various sounds that are out there, the sound of your breathing. So ask about that. Ask them to rate that 1 to 5. How vivid did you see that? And then focus on the kinesthetic part. How well did you feel yourself making the movements? So if you're running, you know, did you feel the, or you could focus on specific things. How did you feel? You could break it down into, how well did you feel your feet? You're now pushing off the ground, the front, and where were your feet pushing off the ground? From the front, from your forefoot, or from the midfoot? If you're really tired, you might be pushing from the back, which wouldn't be as good, but that's the way we are sometimes. How did you feel? And then your energy level, how did you feel with that? How did you feel about, you could break it down to, did you feel hot or cold, or did you feel high energy, or were you losing energy? All those kind of things. And then ask them to rate that. Was there no image, or although it's extremely vivid and clear? And then a fourth question would be, how aware were you of your mood? Of your mood, what emotions you were feeling? How aware were you of that? Maybe some people didn't have any awareness. Some people are just kind of zoned out. But of course, that could be a good thing if you're just in the zone somewhere. But rate how vivid that was for the athlete there. And then, so that's one exercise to see yourself practicing alone. And then you could do the same kind of exercise with practicing with your teammates or with a coach or with a parent or someone else, with others there. So this time you, and just imagine, this is one example, you could do many different examples, but imagine yourself making a mistake. You make a mistake that everyone notices, and then close your eyes for a minute. Imagine making an error, and then the situation afterward, you know, did you recover, that kind of thing, from that. So that's a good one, because you want to have people be able to anticipate making an error, not all the time, but things happen. And so that's one of the key aspects of successful athletes, is be able to recover from mistakes. So asking, how well did you see yourself in this situation? And that's going to rate that vividness of that, 1 to 5. How well did you hear the sounds? Again, you know, if it's a big football game playing in a stadium and you mess up, I mean, you can hear the sounds of, right, the boos of thousands of people. That could be devastating. Or hearing the coach saying, oh, my gosh, you messed up, or that kind of thing. So being able to hear the sounds, or maybe hearing that your inner sounds of your voice saying, it's okay, I can make it through this. And then asking a third question about feeling, the kinesthetic part. How did you feel yourself making the movements? And that's where an athlete could think about the vividness there of making movements, of making a, maybe making a mistake, and then being able to recover and showing them a new movie, or they can create a new movie of making the correct movements to be able to recover from that mistake. So whenever you have them visualize a mistake, it's good to have them also visualize recovering from the mistake and get them to improve the vividness there. And then how well did you feel the emotions of the situation? So, of course, when you make a mistake, that's going to be really, it can be really tough. Or it could be just momentary, too. It could be just something that they do a mistake and then quickly and say, oh, my gosh, I messed up. I gotta do something here and change what I'm doing. It could be a quick adjustment, or it could be a really difficult time for a person. But that's a good one to, if they have, oftentimes, if an athlete has trouble with visualizing something, then if they, we're really good at visualizing the negative stuff. So that can be a way to increase the vividness of their imagery. Being able to visualize them making a mistake, it because we can easily bring that to mind. Everybody remembers the time that they messed up and then being able to recover from that. So it's good to that can be a good thing to do. But then it's good to end on a positive note and then say another exercise of visualizing, yeah, recovering from a mistake or performing really, really well, doing a peak performance, and then going through the different senses there and seeing how well they remember that, and getting them to be able to visualize the peak performance or the good performance just as vividly as they do the negative one. Oftentimes you might find that people, when they visualize a negative experience or a mistake, it's really vivid. They just realize, boy, they remember that one because it's everybody noticed and they messed up. So it increases the vividness of the imagery. So they realize, oh, yeah, I can imagine this. And so now you can use the same skills to visualize something going really well. So, so that's a good one to do. So let me just check in with you. Yeah, George, if you're there, you can check in too. You might be off. The phone might be having difficulty. Let me just ask if you have questions or comments about that, or have you visualized a mistake or used visualization to be able to imagine a mistake or how the athletes recover from a mistake or an error? Anyone can jump in.
Hey, guys, Matt again here. So just on, I like how taking these steps can help us sort of process and understand that this essentially is a lesson that we're always trying to learn. Sometimes those lessons didn't have necessarily the outcome that we wanted, but if we see it a little bit differently, I think that really helps. So I like what you said about just really looking at those quote-unquote mistakes. Maybe I would say with my athletes is this is not optimal. It's non-optimal, but was it really a mistake? Is it more of a low point you didn't expect? How is it that you interpreted that information? So without getting too long-winded there, I just kind of wanted to, like, bring up a couple times. I feel like some of my athletes are so hard on themselves. They think everything's a mistake when really it's just, is it really a mistake when you're still trying to learn something? I think it's more of a mistake when you've practiced something over and over again. You've had several purposeful practices to overcome certain obstacles and change those, you know, threats into challenges. But a lot of times, and I guess this would be with my younger athletes more so, but they're experiencing something really for the first time, or they have very little experience with it. So they're really just going through it and processing it. And I try to teach them that it's really not a mistake even, and it's just more of about a way of kind of switching that interpretation and choosing to see things as a way to get better and a learning lesson. So that's kind of what I've focused on a little bit more with my younger athletes, and my older athletes or my athletes that have sort of made it. You know, a lot of times they will tell those younger athletes that they just choose to recognize those differences, of course, and the issues that they had when they were younger seem like that was just a stepping stone to them now, so don't take it so seriously all the time.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you, Matt. That's great. Yeah, just to, rather than thinking of it as a negative experience or a mistake, just a low point that you asking him that question, was it just a low point you didn't expect? And then, it's just a process of learning, and we can a way to get better. And I think, yeah, I often use that and then emphasize to the person that we usually learn the most from our difficult experiences. That's where we really ask ourselves, okay, what is it I'm going through really tough time here. What do I need to learn? Or this an athlete's often reach out, can reach out to you, and you can help them kind of process it and go through all this, because they're feeling all these emotions and upset from it. And that's, boy, that's, it's a signal inside that we need to learn something, maybe learning something and asking, maybe it's a combination of things. I need to learn the mechanics of how to do the sport, how to react in a certain situation, and also learn to handle my emotions and in a tough situation. Maybe I need to learn how to communicate better to the team. Maybe they didn't understand what was going on, or maybe the anger was getting out of control, or frustration, so I have to be able to channel the anger to something better. Maybe I need to find out, do I need to get help? And that's where, you know, you and I as performing edge coaches can come in and help them process through things. Or maybe I need to work smarter with my sport and think these things through, and maybe use, like we're talking about, visualization techniques to visualize all the different scenarios, because they might not have, might have been prepared for all when things are going really well, but maybe they don't hadn't visualized this particular situation that came up. So visualize all the scenarios that they can, because we can't possibly practice all the different scenarios, but we can visualize them in our minds, all the different things that could happen, and then how to react to those, and maybe it's just experience, you know, just this is a good thing, even though it's difficult and hard right now, because I made this error, mistake, or learning experience. I could get through this. Maybe it's something I can experience. This is the more experience I have, the more situations I know how to get through. So, yeah, thanks, Matt. And how about Dave? Give responses to that, to any mistakes.
I would just kind of talk about. I was at a track meet last year, and they run the younger kids kind of after we're done, and it was a 10-year-old. He just lost, like, pretty much his first race, and he was just a puddle of tears. And it's like just the kind of the all or nothing, kind of like it was everything, and just the perspective that he needed. And so there's a bunch of people kind of rallying around him, right? This is before I started the program. But, you know, just the perspective, the mindset, like, it's, you know, it's one race, it's a learning experience. Like, people were saying things like that, fortunately, and kind of building this kid back up. But, you know, I think no matter how old you are, right, there's that inner critic, that inner message that you have, that thing you say to yourself when you lose. It's like, where did that come from, right? Is that your message, or did you get that from someone else? And how are you going to manage that? And so that's what I recall that so vividly, because when I was a young track athlete and I lost a race, I took it pretty hard too, but, you know, no one was picking me up like that at the point. I was just working it out kind of on my own, but I still carry those messages to this day. And I think that's an important thing for me to remember as I'm working with clients too, is that there's a powerful message in there about winning and losing and kind of the journey.
Yeah. Right. That's good to know. Yeah. Oh, George, are you there too? Or I had some sound maybe. George, if you want to join us, you can jump in. Or you might be having trouble with this phone too. But yeah, Dave, that's good to, winning and losing, and then realize it's a journey is a good word to use with people, that it's, and practice, like it's just one race. It's every race or every competition is practice for the next race. So looking at it as practice, and learn, and the more that you can learn, then the better you can be for the next time around, because that situation may well come up again. But yeah, and oftentimes coaches have that perspective of all or nothing. You did it right or you messed up, kind of thing. But there's a whole spectrum in between that maybe you did it, you improved just a little bit from last time. So that's really important to acknowledge the improvement. I heard a voice in the background trying to come in, but I can't quite hear if that's George or someone else. Thanks, Dave, for that, being able to have that kind of perspective there. And that I think we can, the value of what we do is to go beyond what their athletic coach is saying and be able to say we're all about character improvement and building character strengths, and they're asking what character strength can we build here in this situation that's going to help for next time, attitude or mental strength can we use to that you can carry forward from before. And then also asking yourself, like you said, Dave, the inner critic, where did that, we had the scripts inside, where did that come from is a good question to ask. So you can say it might well have come from parents who said you'll never be good enough, you'll never be fast enough. Those kind of really damaging statements that parents can say, or oh, you're not as good as, why aren't you as good as your brother? that comparing stuff is really tough, or coaches can do that too because they emphasize the stars sometimes. So, but realizing kind of the bigger picture that that's maybe somebody else's script, or and that we can, it's just a chance, think of it as a channel on the radio, and that we can change the channel to that was my dad's script or what he said, but I can have the, if the kid's name is John, I can have the John channel and switch it over to what I want to think and what I want to say and do self-coaching kind of thing. So, it's a really good way to switch over the narrative there to being able to say something that you want to build here. And then we've got we did the pre-visualization, and then, in the PECI, the modules there, just go over a couple of the questions in the post-visualization or post-assessment after they do a visualization. I think, or they could do this after any practice or any game as well, to be able to say after they do a visualization, or it could be after a game or something too, where your athlete to reflect and to do the learning afterward. And it's good to allow for flexibility and acceptance of their experience. So let them know, it's okay to, whatever happened, that's okay. And or if you did a visualization with them, and if you said, you can say what I said was not exactly correct. Maybe, sometimes you might not use a technical term just exactly the way they would use it. Tell them you could always just fill in the details and go to that place that's right for you in your mind. But, ask them to tell me about your experience. So this is a good way to assess how they did in their visualization, or you could use the same assessment for after a race or after a competition too. And tell me about your experience and what were the highlights there, and then what senses did you use, and then ask them about their vividness, so that for next time, maybe if you emphasize the visual part, but they're really more a kinesthetic person, then you want to know that so you can emphasize the kinesthetic part next time. You can bring in all the senses, but see what they use as well. So ask them, what did you see or hear or feel most vividly? And then what was most prominent, your visual sense, your auditory, your kinesthetic, your sometimes if you're out like in the water, in the ocean, you smell the ocean water, the taste if you were really thirsty, needing water, you know, sometimes these long, I'm a triathlete, I've done many Ironman races, I know Matt, you've done many of these long races too, and Dave and George, and it's, you can feel, you can get really thirsty or hungry, sometimes there's not the aid stations, not adequate amount of water, and you can really notice that part, and how to get through that. So, yeah, and ask him, tell me about what you felt and what thoughts went through your mind and what were the learning points for you. So this is something you want to spend a lot of time on, I think, telling what they learned and not just one thing, but go down a list. What did you learn about? And then expand out on that. What did you learn about resilience? Or what did you learn about tough moments? What did you learn about yourself? Your personality, what did you learn about your, how you handle this situation with another athlete if there was something going on, what did you learn about your inner thoughts? You could really expand on that question to all the different things. You could start off with an open question, but then go into what the learning points are for specific areas of their life. What did you learn about your mechanics? What did you learn about the technical parts of your sport? And what you want to work on next? And then you can ask, do you have new insights or aha experiences? Just knowing how to get through something is really, really tough. I know one time when I was scuba diving in Hawaii, it was really I was having trouble with my equipment and really having a panic experience, thinking I can't do this, and breathing was really short and shallow, and it took a lot to be able to just relax enough to just breathe out. And I remember the breathing, what I learned was, the aha experience was that I had to just breathe out real slowly so that I could take a good deep breath in. And so breathing was key in those kind of experiences, that you can really control your thoughts by controlling your breathing. And it's so simple, it's very accessible to all of us, that simple, slow, deep breathing. It's some research just came out recently, talking about how 5.5 seconds, taking a breath in for slow, deep breath, 5.5 seconds, goes through your mouth and your nose, not just the mouth, because the mouth, if it's only mouth breathing, it can really restrict heart rate and all kinds of bodily functions, but especially breathing through the nose and breathing 5.5 seconds in and then 5.5 seconds out, slowly, you know, doing that two or three times even before the start of a race or start of a competition, you can make a huge difference if you want to slow down, relax, or if you want to speed up. Maybe you're just feeling too out of it and too sleepy, then, you know, you want to speed up the breathing. It's like a gas pedal, really. You can put on the gas or you can put on the brakes. So that's something that, a simple thing that I learned from that experience, and you can find out what aha experiences your athletes have, and then help them to create a success anchor of some sort. Maybe they did that during the visualization, or if not, you can have them do that later on, some kind of a thing that they remember from that experience, a color, a shape, a word, or physical gesture. It's good to really think of something, if they didn't think of it during the competition or the visualization, help them to now, they could have created it any time, they could create it now, create an anchor of some sort to a fist pump or looking, maybe it was looking at swimmers look at the board, the leaderboard and look at who, at your name, your time up there, maybe it was that, seeing that success there. So, looking at what you, creating that anchor of some sort, and it could change throughout time too. And then, but it's really important to think, you know, when you help athletes reflect on something, what actions would you like to take, you know, in your life and your sport going forward with your goals based on this, based on your competition or your practice or your visualization experience. So thinking, you know, what actions do you want to take to improve after this? And that's a real key here to helping them to make good use of their time with you. And how do you want to use that energy or learning in, you know, toward something coming up? So thinking about what's the next goal and how do you want to use what you learned in the past, we get really specific with them about that. So thinking about that and then questions. And then it's good to really ask for feedback, the athlete to give you feedback about what they, you know, and questions that they might have for you. Within the visualization or within your work with them. So what questions do you have for me or within yourself after doing this experience? So thinking about that, it's good to get that feedback and maybe ask the athlete to ask themselves, what do I need help with now? So, and how can coaching help with those new goals? So ask what they need help with. That's a really good question to give you an idea of what further work you can do with them. And then ask for feedback for yourself for how I would ask what feedback do you have for me, how I took you through this visualization. So any positive and negative feedback, maybe when an athlete told me as I just, a storytelling and the emotions made it realistic. You know, say you did a good job of recapping the warm up and the it was a tennis match, and you know, you talk about the nerves, and there was you know, just you know, specifics that they might have said. Maybe it's the pause. The pacing, you know, they could tell you that you're going too fast or too slow or too much time on the breathing at the beginning. Just get right into the visualization. It's really good to get that feedback about how you're doing. And then the wording, if there's incorrect words that they want you to use that help, that's important to know and ask how it could be improved for next time. So those are some good things to ask, I think, to allow them to reflect on an experience. So, so those are some things I wanted to share with you with the post-assessment. And then I have, just a few more, a little more information here, too, on other things you can do with visualization. So, yeah, but just want to open it up. If you have, what questions do you have? Or comments about how to kind of to use visualization techniques to, you know, during this pandemic right now when everyone's in the lockdown, we're going into almost 3 months now, 2.5 months of lockdown. How are you experiencing this and or if you're working with athletes, how are they experiencing the lockdown with the coronavirus and COVID-19 and how visualization could help through that. Do you guys have comments or questions about that or anything in general? Anyone can jump in.
Well, just in general, I like my athletes have had more time to write their stories and to practice their visualization and find out what works for them. So what's been interesting, at least so far, we haven't been able to put it into practice, of course. You know, and that we will, I guess, be yet to determine how effective this has been for them. But I feel like we were doing a lot of training before, and of course, you know, you've got to get in that training. You can't just see yourself doing, accomplishing these great physical acts without the training, but the training took a little bit more of a backseat, and we've been able to focus more on this. It made me very grateful that I even took this course in the first place, because I already had a lot of things set up for them, and that gave them, you know, obviously gave them something to focus on that they could do, which was really a blessing in this time. And depending on my athletes, I mean, I've one of my athletes, he was a professional basketball player and playing for Spain, and then had to come back, and you know, everything was obviously canceled. And my runners have a little bit easier of a time with it, especially if they're, say, cross-country trail runners. It hasn't interrupted things quite so much for them. But, you know, it has given more time for everybody, I think, to focus more on themselves. And there are some pretty big inner critics there. And I think this has really been a blessing in that way. So, you know, I've actually been talking a lot about silver linings with, you know, with my athletes. And this really seems to have been a blessing for us in a lot of ways. I mean, I know it's a horrible thing, but at least this, I think, has enabled my athletes to work on their mental strength a little bit more, which I think we all needed.
Right. Yeah. And we can always work on that. Yeah. So that's good. Thank you, Matt. And, COVID-19 is something, the pandemic is something that's new to all of us. None of us have ever been through a worldwide pandemic before, so it's a learning experience. And I'm glad that you found the Performing Edge coaching techniques here helpful to give them something to focus on. Yeah, you've got a whole bunch of techniques you can help them with, and to be able to focus on the, you know, your kind of gratitude muscle, and be able to say ask yourself, what's good about this situation? There's always something good. And it's hard to not be socially connected as we want. But in another way, you can say it's good to be able to learn to be with yourself and to be able to reflect. You can stay socially connected in other ways, by phone and Zoom and all of that, but to be able to learn your own feelings and learn other things about yourself, and be able to keep working on that gratitude muscle. What's the other side of this? What's good about this situation? How can I use this to my advantage? The air is cleaner, there's less traffic, so it's easier to get places. For example, my gym just opened up yesterday for the first time after 2.5 months, my health club, just the pool part. And so we walk in, you have to make a reservation for the pool, and then they do 4 different checkpoints, and it's really different. You can't just hang out. You got to go in and show and ask all these questions and wear a mask, and then go through and get in the pool. Each person gets a lane, but you only get an hour, and you get in, and then you get out, and they say, okay, now you got to leave through here, and can't use the showers, can't use the jacuzzi or the steam room, or can't talk, no socializing, just to get in and out. And I think, oh God, it's just tough. But then I've got to use my grateful muscle and say, okay, well, what's good about this? It's good that I have my own lane. I don't have to fight with thousands of kids. They're normally in the pool. Now it's just one person per lane. It's good. It's quiet. So it's nice to have that quiet time. And it's good to be able to, use my adaptive muscle and adapt to a new situation. We're going to have to adapt to all kinds of things. So we need to work on that resilience muscle, that flexibility muscle, to say, okay, well, I'm glad I could at least use the pool and have whatever workout I could get in here. So that's an example of, so normally I like to swim for an hour and a half, but I can only swim for less than an hour there before they kick you out, because they got to sanitize everything now with the pandemic before the next group come in. And so I think, well, okay, I can't swim as long as I could before, but maybe I could swim faster, swim with more intensity, get in a more intense workout, use every minute that I have in a better way, less rest, and make it more intense. So I learned to adapt that way. With less time, it makes each moment more precious. So that's an example of the, kind of using that gratitude muscle with the health club. Thanks, Matt, for your examples with that. And you're fortunate to be in a sport, working in a sport, at least with where people can work out individually with trail running and runners working out individually, and then they can share their this stuff online. I know one example with our running club, I've gone to the Impala's racing team here in the Bay Area, and everyone can't meet to run together, but could do other things online. We're creating our own recipe book or cookbook for the Impala's, and everyone's putting in their favorite, what they like to make, some dish or a drink or something, some particular food that's healthy that they make, and sharing that and then putting that together to make an Impala's cookbook. So that's something, an example of getting us all healthier and being able to have more flexibility in the things that we eat to nourish our bodies. So you can come up with all kinds of new ideas. Yeah, how about you, George or Dave? Are you there? You could. How have you? Any ideas with COVID, with a pandemic? How you or your athletes can adapt to that? I'm not sure if they're there. You could press star. If you're muted, maybe you could unmute or press star 6 on your phone. So can you? Oh, can you guys hear me? Okay.
Yeah, I can hear you. This is Dave.
Yeah, Dave. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. You have any comments about the time that we're in and what how your athletes or people are adapting to that, or suggestions?
Sure.
No,
sure.
Questions?
Just for the process that I'm seeing with my clients and families, just as we're 3 months into it, I'm starting to see some like kind of chinks in the armor, and the difference between a chosen like time of break and rest and kind of to recharge versus a forced one. And so when I'm talking to my younger guys, like getting out and doing something, once or twice per day, getting up for a walk, just kind of keeping kind of their, some life balance kind of issues in check. And I'm just really supporting them and not pressuring them, but just saying, you know what, let's get out at least once or twice today, do a little exercise, kind of keep your mind right, because there's a tendency just to sit around at home thinking you can't go out at all. But I'm finding that the ones who are doing a little exercise each day, kind of staying in the zone like that, they're much better off.
Right. Yeah, and the exercise it depends on the level of the person. If it's an athlete, of course they want to get out and do their normal workout, and sometimes you have to adapt to whatever's available. If you can't go to the gym, you can get, like we were talking before, get some just do core body exercises at home, look up or get a TRX suspension trainer, some straps that you can hook up somewhere, and lots of things you can use at home. But if it's someone that's not used to doing that much exercise, then, just getting outside, doing several walks. It doesn't have to be one long walk of an hour, hour and a half, but it could be a 10. I just go out, in addition to my regular exercise, I'll go out for a walk. It's been 100 degrees out, crazy hot temperatures, so going out at night at 7 o'clock and just doing a 20-minute walk can feel fantastic. I did that last night as I was preparing for this phone call with all of you today, and as I went for the 20-minute walk, I was able to, all of a sudden, my mind opened up and I could think of all kinds of examples I wanted to share with you and different ideas. And you can do your creative thinking while you're, or reflective thinking while you're walking. It's amazing how walking can bring in any, as because I talked about before, research, psychological research showing that any kind of movement with left and right movement, that you move your left leg, your right leg alternately, or your left and right arm alternately back and forth, in any kind of movement, it could be walking, swimming, running, bicycling, when you're doing that left-right movement with your appendages, then that's helping to balance the left and right hemispheres of your brain. That improves memory, it improves creativity, improves the speed of your thinking. So it's in addition to getting exercise, getting that aerobic exercise and fitness with your heart and lungs, it's also improving your brain and your ability to think of things and open up new avenues to think, oh, that problem I'm dealing with, feeling stuck with, all of a sudden now that I'm moving my body, I can start moving my mind, my mental capacity, and be able to come up with some new thoughts, new ideas here about how to handle that. Or maybe it's not a Mount Everest. Maybe I can figure this out here. Or maybe you've got a conversation you need to have with someone, thinking, okay, oh, here's how I could approach it, or here's, instead of just reacting, here's how I could say, here's what I could say to the person in a better way, you know, thinking of the wording of something. So, you know, or if it's a hurdle that you're trying to get over, this pile of papers I got to get through at home, visualize going, being able to go through those, and all of a sudden you, after the walk, after doing this left-right movement for a while, you can get back, and all of a sudden it doesn't seem like such a big deal. You just go in and tackle it. So, yeah, just any kind of movement is a good thing, and it doesn't have to be a heavy-duty workout. It can be any kind of level of movement. And if you can't get outside because of the weather, too, there's always, you know, for inside movement. Just as I'm talking to you right now, I'm standing at my computer, not sitting. Much better to be standing most of the time. And, you know, you could be doing arm circle stretches to be able to move. And as you're moving your body, then that creates that movement in your more flexibility in your mental thinking, too. So, yeah, really good stuff. So it's also with visualization or with imagery questionnaires, there's other ones out there available too, and I'll send you those, list those there that people have done research on. And I think the basic ones that we've talked about here, the pre-visualization assessment, the post-visualization assessment, and that questionnaire that I mentioned with practicing the different practicing alone and then practicing with someone else and rating the vividness of each of the of your imagery, of each of the senses. Those things are you know, basic ones that you can that can cover most areas. But also, it's good to just ask your client, what would you like to what would be most helpful to you in visualizing something? What would be something that you could do to, what would be helpful for you? And they might come give you new ideas that you hadn't thought of, something that you can really get into. So just emphasize that there's all, with visualization, that there's no limits. You can create all kinds of things. It can be really amazing. I know I'm a musician as well. I think some of you mentioned you're musicians too. You can use these kinds of processes for your creating, for being creative in other ways, and musical endeavors, or with writing, or just new ideas, new programs for your athlete, so you can come up with all kinds of things with visualizing something that you want, and you know, the bigger picture kinds of stuff also, visualizing the kind, you know, what you want your practice with our work here, visualizing what you want your practice to look like working with your athletes. So it gives us a chance to reflect, visualize your coaching business and what you would like to do with that. And rather than just, you know, with this pandemic, we tend to, it's tending to close everything down and cancel things and make it look like this is going on and limiting our options. With visualization, it can be the opposite of that. You can, there's no limits. You can visualize what your business could look like in a few months from now. We don't know the time period, but it's okay. Visualization doesn't have to have a time period. You can visualize yourself being really successful, maybe writing a book, doing a podcast, doing videos. And those are all things that are not limited right now. And because everyone's online, you can more people can watch what you're listen to what you have to say and reach more people. So lots of ideas there. So yeah, so let's finish up with just talking. I would like to ask for your takeaways, something you learned today or something that was helpful that you might be able to implement. And then you could write down your calendars. The next calls are always the second and fourth Thursday. So the next one would be June 11th and then June 25th. So you could put that on your calendar there. So let me ask you, just go around and what takeaways do you have, something that a nugget that was good, helpful for you today? Anyone can jump in, something that was helpful for you moving forward, or something you can share with us is fine.
Yeah, hey, Joanne, Matt, I guess I'll just go first, and I would just say it reminded me simple things about just asking your athlete what they want, or allowing them to kind of incorporate their process with visualization and not dictating as much about what I think we should be focusing on in that. Like, I want to visualize I'm going to be the ball. Like, that was interesting. I really thought too much about that. And then just in general, I think just, what do you think, or how did you how did you feel about this situation, and just listening, understanding, verifying, you know, that's kind of again, I think the bigger role that I have to, or I should be playing with my athletes, and just trying not to put my own, you know, my own process in that. And so that's kind of just reminding me that the basics are the best. And yeah, just listen and ask them what they learned.
Yeah, great. Thanks. And, yeah, listening on a deep level, if you're with them in person, you know, you can listen to look at their body posture, too, and their tone of voice and what it is they want to do. Or if you're on the phone, listening to the pauses in their voice or the tone, what they – how they're, you know, the nonverbals are just as important as the words, for sure. So, yeah, thanks, Matt. So incorporating their own process. And Dave or George, I don't know if George, if you're still there, I used to always still try to get connected with the phone. That's great. It's great to have you. Glad you could join us. And Dave, are you there, too?
Yes, I'm here. So, you know, my takeaways, you know, I appreciate what Matt said about, you know, kind of being vulnerable and being willing to share. Also the part about, in terms of visualization, kind of activating the senses, smell, touch, you know, all of that. But I think just match the client's needs. Like, what are they asking of me? How can I reach out to them and meet that need? I think that kind of one of my bigger takeaways.
Okay, great. Yeah, I think your phone is cutting in and out a little bit.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
But so yeah, activating the senses. You said, now I can hear you. And what they're asking of you. Okay.
Yeah, and then the part about you know, seeing it as a movie in your mind, I thought that was very helpful too, because you know, a lot of people talk about visualization, but I don't think they know what it really means. So making sure a younger client specifically understands what that means, I think is key too.
Yeah, right. A movie, whether they see a theater or a YouTube movie or a movie on TV, something they can relate to, then they can create their own movie. So you can be the director. So that's good, yeah. And being aware of because we're always creating movies in our mind anyway, usually the negative ones, we're playing the mistakes. So be aware of those movies that we're already playing and then be able to, say, create your own new movie. And you be the director. That gives them a sense of empowerment, for sure. So, yeah, awesome. Great. Well, great discussion with you, Matt and Dave and George and other people that are listening on the call. So we'll have our next call on June the 11th. And in the meantime, the next day or two, I'll have up the recording for this and all the resources I mentioned and the notes. And assessments for imagery. So great chatting with you, and have a great week, and glad we all moved through this time period together here. So glad to talk with you, and great minds always think alike. It's good to have our prayer heads together here, and great sharing with you. Talking about visualization and assessment. And so next time, if you have suggestions for me for our next topics, you can always email me too. So, does anyone have suggestions for topics for next time as well? Or if you think of some, you just send me an email, and that'll be great. So thank you, everyone, and we'll talk to you next time. Have a good day.
Okay.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you. Okay, take care. Bye.